This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, my guest will be Linda Lyle Miller, who has written a wonderful book called The Widow. Yes, that happens. Okay, right now I'm going to turn to my first guest, Jamie Brenner. Hi, Jamie. Oh, she's not on yet. Okay, we're having fun today. Back. The reason I am a little bit cuckoo today is I am getting ready to leave for New York, and I have been going around and around doing all sorts of things, including taping this morning. And so it's just one of those days. Anyway, my guest at the bottom of the hour is The Yankee Widow. How could I forget that? Because it is a wonderful book. I love books about, it's funny, I didn't really appreciate books about the Civil War until about 10 years ago. And then I started and I became really obsessed with them. And I love Civil War era books. I love getting, I think that started when we started going a lot to Washington, D.C. And we visited the different battlefields around Washington, D.C. And so I really became involved in the whole history of the Civil War. And there is nobody who writes better than Linda Lyle Miller about the war. But now I'm going to my guest. I've been looking forward to her coming back to the program because it is summer. And if it is summer, then who's going to be on the program? Jamie Brenner. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Patsy. It's so good to be back.
Okay. Well, it is so nice to have you back because, as I said, last time when you were on, I said we're making it now that we're our goal is to make your name as famous as Mary Higgins Clark. And so when people think of summertime, they're going to say, oh, another Jamie Brenner book is coming out.
There you go. That's the idea. That's what keeps me going during the long winters when I'm writing for the summer.
That's it. And, of course, the new book, the cover is so, it's again, so beautiful. I see that you're developing a theme here with your covers. And the new book is called Drawing Home, and it is really great.
Thank you, Patsy. I appreciate that.
Okay. Well, you know, I do think of some authors every day. For example, I think of Jane Austen every day because I've been obsessed with that woman since I was 11 years old. And I think of you every day now because I did what I told you about last time. You had a little paragraph in your book that really touched my heart, and it's called, and I'm going to say it because I turned it into a little a plaque that I have next to my desk, and it's your words are, I think, just lovely. And I'm going to read it so everybody can remember it. A child will make love stronger, days shorter, home happier, clothes shabbier, the past forgotten, and the future worth living for. And I think that is such a wonderful little, you know, snippet of your writing that says so much about you. And I know I keep it, and I don't know if you actually follow my suggestion that you hand this little snippet out to people, because once you read this, I think it puts you sort of in perspective that you're a very caring and loving person.
Oh, well, thank you, Patsy. Well, while I was writing my last book, The Husband Hour, and even during writing of Drawing Home, in beach towns, you often see these wooden signs that either have the names of the towns or sayings like, I left my heart at the beach. And I just love, like, the positive energy those types of signs put out. And interestingly, there's a new company now called AR Workshop in a few cities where you can go in and they will teach you how to make your own handcrafted sign for your home, saying whatever is meaningful to you. So for anyone who likes that and likes having something by their desk or in their kitchen, I really recommend, it's so fun to do it yourself, like not just to have the saying or buy the sign, but to create something like that. And I did it for the first time last weekend and actually Instagrammed the process. My Instagram's at Jamie Brenner Author for anyone who's interested in that sort of thing.
Oh, that is a very good idea. Wonderful little project that people can do this summer, because it's, you know, you want to go out and do things. I know I used to take my boys. We used to do pottery classes. We used to do, art classes. We did all sorts of different classes and in the summertime. And it was really wonderful and something that you always remember.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. You know, book clubs are great. Here's something else a bunch of friends can do together, you know, over a bottle of wine or coffee. And, you know, that's my craft is writing, and I hope my books bring people together. And this is just another way to sort of, you know, exercise that community.
Well, let's talk about the new book, Drawing Home. It is really good.
Thank you, Patsy. I had fun with this one, I have to say. They're all fun in their own way, but this one was special.
So this one, I found, I've been to Sag Harbor one time, and so it was very evocative, and I want you to tell the listeners what you want about the story. It's intriguing, and I was particularly touched by one of the characters who has OCD, and so tell us a little bit about the book.
So Drawing Home, as you mentioned, is set in Sag Harbor, which for anyone who has not been there or not familiar, it's on the east end of New York. It's in the Hamptons. Very special place. It's a little quieter than what people usually think of as the Hamptons. And the book specifically is set in a place called the American Hotel, which is a place I first stayed at a few years ago, and I just knew, you know, there's a book here. The hotel only has 8 rooms. Part of it's been standing since the Revolutionary War. And the unique thing about it is it's a hotel for visitors, obviously, who are coming to town, but it at the same time manages to be a very robust local hangout. So I really wanted to bring my readers to, you know, hang out there. So that was the jumping off point for this book. And then I just had to find a story to go along with the setting.
And you came out with a very fascinating story. It was unexpected, and it's turned out this book is a combination of the mystery involved. There's the family story. It's really great. Well, tell us now, Emma, who is the main character, works at the hotel, and
that's right.
She has a daughter who's I thought was a beautifully written character.
Thank you. That one didn't take too much research since I have 2 teenagers in my home. Right, so Drawing Home, we start out with Emma, who's a young mother, and her job is working the front desk at the American Hotel. And, you know, she sometimes has a hard time making ends meet. She's divorced. She has a daughter just at the most excruciating age, which is the early teenage years. And really, the hotel and her job are her haven and her home away from home. Until the start of the summer, when things get a little dramatic, and this is not a spoiler because it literally happens on page, 3. One of the most renowned patrons of the bar, a world-famous artist named Henry, drops dead over his martini. And what happens next is even more shocking because he has left his waterfront home and all the priceless art inside to Emma's teenage daughter, Penny. And the question, of course, is why? And just as Emma is grappling with this, a Park Avenue art dealer named B. Winstead sweeps into town looking to wrest the estate away from Emma and her daughter. So that's the beginning of the book.
And that leads to a heck of a story. And it's I love the way it's told from three different points of view, from Emma's, Penny's, and Bea. And as the story develops, we see, well, first of all, you've done some great work here in revealing things slowly. So we really are pulled into the story and get deeply involved.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's the hardest parts of writing is, you know, you might know the whole thing in your head, but like how to dole out the story in a way that's most entertaining to the readers. So the hardest part isn't figuring out the story. It's figuring out the best way and order in which to tell it. And that's what takes so long. So I appreciate, you know, hearing your experience was that it was, you know, there were surprises and it unfolded, because that's really how I want people to experience it, like sort of like a mystery, like what's going to happen next.
And, of course, finding out why Penny, the teenage daughter, she's 14 years old, and why she became involved with a great name, Henry, right? Why she has OCD and what that involves?
Yeah, well, I mean, anxiety in general is just really rampant among teenagers today, especially girls. And I wanted to explore that and sort of the idea of, you know, what could happen if we could just get kids off their phones and doing something real and something rewarding. So I had that idea in my mind. And then the idea for Henry came a few years ago when I was reading a story about the famous New York Times photographer Bill Cunningham. Now, Bill Cunningham was a legend in New York, and he spent decades and decades standing in the corner of 57th Street and Fifth Avenue, right by Tiffany's, photographing people as they walked by to capture street style. And then by night, he was at all the high society parties photographing socialites and celebrities, and he was just, I mean, Anna Wintour said of him, let's face it, we all dress for Bill. Now, when he died, he had kept a negative of every single photograph he ever took.
Whoa.
And he left this valuable archive, not to the New York Times, not to a museum, but to a bartender in Boston. And when this was discovered, all these society ladies, well, not all of them, but some of them, were really up in arms about it. And this made me think about, you know, our life's work and our legacies and what we choose to do at the end of our lives. So that gave me the idea for Henry and why he made the choice he made with his estate and Emma's daughter, Penny.
Now, of course, I thought you did B so well. You really literally feel when she sweeps into town. I mean, she is like, she is a personality. And we'll mention, you know, Wintour, that she's like that kind of personality. She just makes an entrance.
Yes. Writing Bea was my favorite all-time character to write. And it's so funny because I'm, you know, starting to get a lot of reviews and on Goodreads, and some people are so angry with her at first to the point that they almost can't continue. And then they say, oh, by the end, you know, I really understood Bea. And I never found her that abrasive. Like, I find her more humorous. But I really am fascinated by older women who are just at that point in their life where they're not going to take any nonsense, and they know what they want and they go after it. And she, to me, is just the perfect example of that. And I loved writing her because I think in real life we're like polite or we're shy or we don't know what to do. And being able to write someone who's so determined and unapologetic was really a joy.
Now, when you were you know, it's so funny when you start a writing career and it just keeps flowing and growing, and sort of as with you now, it's really turning into this snowball where you're getting more and more attention, more and more praise. It's pretty great, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It really is so rewarding, and I do feel the momentum building from summer to summer. This is my third beach set novel in a row. I'd one before that, The Wedding Sisters. And I see the bookstores know me now, and I see the same people starting to show up year after year. It's like little mini reunions at certain bookstores. And it's very, very rewarding. And, you know, I write books about family, but part of the books are about the families we create in life, not just the ones we're born into. And I really feel like I've started to have this creative family of people like you, or independent booksellers, or the readers who show up year after year, and everyone who's with me on this journey. And it's extremely gratifying, and I really appreciate it.
Well, you know, the important thing in this business, it's not easy to get noticed. It's not easy to go out there and have to promote your book. And it does help when you finally get to the point where you have this name recognition. And it, I think, partly comes from the fact that you do have a cohesive look. Your books have a cohesive look. The minute we see them, we say, ah, that's another Jamie book. And I think that's important. Sometimes people miss that they don't understand that there's a whole ball game that you have to play here.
Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, you know, if things are getting tougher in the book industry. You know, bookstores are, you know, there's less of them. The ones we have less space. So I think readers go in and they want to know what they're going to get. And I have the experience of, if I love a book and I want to read another one by the author, I want to know I'm going to have, you know, a similar experience, not the same story, but I know what I'm getting. And I want to give that to my readers, especially the ones who come back book after book. And I think you're right. You know, cover art is important because it's sort of a promise of what you're going to get inside. And luckily, I love my books. The original art designer of them had those stripes on the spine for the first book. And we said, we want to keep them for every book. Like, I love that. And I'm not that much of a visual person, so I really appreciate, you know, all the art department work, because it is such an important part of having the book out there and signaling to the reader, you know, look, this is a hint of what you might experience inside the covers.
It is important. And one of the things that I like about your books is that they are different. You're right, they're family stories, and they're emotional stories. There's humor. There are also tears. And like in this book, there's more suspense, because you really do get into this why, and you wonder sort of, why would anybody leave, you know, anything to a kid, let alone a beachside house in St. Harbor? Like, oh, gosh. You know, you think, ooh, where?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit of like Cinderella wish fulfillment. And also, you know, summertime, I really think people have asked me, you know, what is a beach read? And I think a beach read is pure escapism. And for me, part of escapism is having that page-turning quality. So it's not just being immersed in the specific place, in this case Sag Harbor or any beach town, but I like that feeling of what happens next, whether I'm reading a thriller or a book with a beach on the cover or anything. I like to be carried, you know, swept away.
Well, I have a feeling that also the Audible version of this book particularly is going to be fun. I'm going to get the Audible version. It's because it's the kind of book I know that I'm going to enjoy listening to. And have you listened to the Audible version yet?
I have not, only because it's just very hard for me to hear my books read.
Yeah?
Because I have my idea in my own head. So I don't, because I just don't enjoy it. It makes me
nervous.
Like, oh, I would have done it this way. But I know we have a great reader for this one, because my team worked hard on finding the perfect person. So I do not think you'll be disappointed. I just find it unnerving to have my entire book read to me.
Well, I think it's a great story, very clever. I like all the twists and turns. I love the aspect that you really draw us into Sag Harbor, and you always have the ability to put us in place, and we feel like we're right there, with the characters, which is so important. And of course, they're at the American Hotel. One of the things, you know, I know that my listeners, you know, they are always interested in in literary agents, and I can't let you go. Although I told him I would talk about him, I can't let you go without mentioning Adam.
Oh, yes. My literary agent, Adam Cromie of Movable Type Management, is absolutely amazing. He's my first reader always and my most critical reader. And I wouldn't be able to deliver a book a year without his support, for sure. And it's just a crucial relationship in a writer's life. So I'm very fortunate.
And he is just a wonderful guy. And as I said, he's worth his weight in gold. It's wonderful that he's working with you, because I know he's part of this whole deal of making you into a household name. And part of it is coming out with a designer for your book covers and coming out with a general look and feel for your books. And that's so important. And that's why you need a really great agent. And I know that Adam is. So I wanted just to say to him, I think you're a great guy. And I'm going to get him on the program one day.
Absolutely. I mean, his attention to detail, you know, there's so many moving parts to getting a book out into the world and, you know, not only people knowing about it, but that things go right. So many little things can go wrong. And he just, in every little detail, he manages for me and frees me up to do the writing part. Because I couldn't do that if I was worried about every little thing. And he really is my agent. He's my manager. He's my, you know, like, absolutely head of the ship here.
Well, I think that Drawing Home is a perfect beach read. It has everything that you could want in a beach read: the human interest, and with the mystery here of why. The minute you start this book, you want to know, as you said, you find out in page three what's going to happen, what's happening, and you just have to keep reading and turning those pages, and maybe drinking another pina colada down by the pool until you discover what's happening. And I think you've done a brilliant job with it.
Patsy, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And for anyone who happens to be in Sag Harbor, I'll be at the American Hotel this Saturday from 3 to 5, because, of course, we have to celebrate in the place where the entire story unfolds.
Oh.
So that's a fun little bonus to this particular book tour.
Okay. What is your webpage?
I'm at jamiebrenner.com, and I'm always on Instagram at jamiebrennerauthor.
Okay, well, everybody, go out and get this book. Have a wonderful, wonderful summer read, and know that Jamie's going to be back here in a year.
I'm looking forward to it already, Patsy.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye now, Jamie.
Take care. Bye.
Okay, she's great. I love her. We're going to go to a commercial break, and then we'll be back to it.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you. How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
One of those fun days, and I am waiting to talk to Linda Lyle Miller, who is a wonderful, wonderful author of a book called I'm gonna go crazy with this. Oh boy, I'm having fun with this. The Yankee Widow, and we're gonna be talking to her in a few minutes. And just a minute, we're having fun here today with everything. I have a telephone number here, and we'll go to a book buzz. What book buzz do you have for us?
Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. The House on Xenia by Rita Moreau is the fifth in the delightful Mary Catherine Mahoney mystery series, if I may say so myself. Here's the buzz. When a body is unearthed at the House on Xenia, long-held secrets could be revealed, but no one is talking, especially the aliens. Mary Catherine Mahoney, MC, prefers numbers to her supernatural powers. But when a cold case corpse shows up under her cousin's family home, the only calculations that add up are paranormal. And deep within the floorboards of the House on Xenia, MC and her madcap Greek family uncover evidence pointing to visitors from another planet. Pursued by military agents intent on keeping the secrets buried, MC will have to play by the rules of the House on Xenia in order to expose the alien mystery. And there's only one member of the family who can get to the hidden truth. The House on Xenia can be read as a standalone in the Mary Catherine Mahoney Cozy Mystery Series. If you like psychic female sleuths, crazy family antics, and long-lost aliens, then you'll love Rita Moreau's quirky tale, if I may say so myself. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the books you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Okay. Hi, Linda. Okay, we're just waiting for Linda here in a minute. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Hello. I'm well, despite the little snafu with the phone. I am such a technophobe. It's not funny.
Okay. Well, I've been having one of those kind of days today, too. It's so funny. I'm getting ready to go to New York, and it's just one thing after another today.
Oh, I know. And I'm sorry. I apologize. I know that was operator error, so I deeply apologize for that.
Okay, that's all right. We always need a little bit of excitement in our life.
Really. Well, I have to have anything technical. I need somebody under 40 around, you know, and that certainly isn't me. So anyway, I got it. So all's well that ends well, in the words of the bard.
And well, the important thing is that we got you on, and I actually, you know, I had one of those mind melts for a little while. When I was introducing the book for a minute, I couldn't remember the name, which is crazy because it's such a great name. And it's called, of course, The Yankee Widow. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. And I was you're doing so many things at the same time. It's funny, but
I probably couldn't do it. I would have messed up even more than I have.
Well,
The Yankee Widow, I love that title. We kind of went back and forth on it, but I like it. So we're good.
Yeah, I think we're good with that. It is a great name, and you are such a fascinating writer. I couldn't even list all of the books and all of the awards you have. I've been reading you for quite a while. I'm we lived in Texas for many years, and my husband always wore cowboy clothes. As a matter of fact, he wore cowboy clothes when we lived in Europe, which was wonderful.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, the cowboy, you know how dear they are to my heart.
Oh, I know.
They're the ideal man, as far as I'm concerned, and I think they're quintessentially American. You know, Canadians have cowboys, definitely, and they win regularly at the rodeo. But it's an American thing, you know, probably going back to John Wayne or even further.
Which is funny because I love the McKittrick series, and I've been reading that for years. And then you have a lot. Luckily, you have a lot of books in that series. And as you said, there is something about a cowboy, and it's so funny. My husband is Israeli, but he looks so good in a cowboy. He just started wearing it. It was about the time of Dallas, the television show, and so he started. Yeah. He got, you know, we took a trip and he got his first pair of cowboy boots. And once you get in cowboy boots, you really never want to wear anything else.
Oh, amen to that. Yeah.
I love cowboy
really
boots.
Good for your feet. If they fit, they're really good for your feet because they offer so much support. So, yes, I'm a fan. And I love to watch men in Wranglers walk by, too.
Well, me too. Me too. And it's funny, sometimes I embarrass some of the authors. When C.J. Box came on my program for the very first time, I said, you know, I'm in love with you. He's like, what? What kind of interview?
I read his book.
I know. And I'm saying, like, what? I think he thought, this is a crazy lady. But I said, you look so gorgeous in a cowboy hat.
You can kind of tell the real thing, you know, but obviously your husband carried it off, and the Europeans were probably quite impressed by that.
Well, they were, and we always got the best table in every restaurant.
Well, that's as it should be.
Exactly.
Cowboys are polite and have good manners.
That's it. Well, now the new book, The Yankee Widow, is a little bit different.
Right.
And it's fascinating. I understand it comes from...
Thank you. Go on, I'm sorry.
It comes from a few years of visiting battlefields.
Just a few, yes. My first visit, a total newbie, was to Gettysburg. And I don't even know when that was, but it had to be close to 30 years ago. I knew little, you know, I had the fascination. And I wanted to start with Gettysburg, and that was prophetic, you know, because it was a comical situation. Back then, the internet was still pretty new, and I searched on there, and I found this class that was going to be held at the Gettysburg Hotel, and I signed up for it. Well, when I got there, there were a bunch of people. They all seemed to know each other, and they were laughing and talking and kind of looking at me curiously. So I find out that they were all from, they'd all gone to school in, Cornell, I think, in Ithaca. Is that Cornell? But anyway, this was an academic thing, and I had just horned in there, you know, because I was from the country and I didn't know. But they were wonderful to me, you know, they included me and were very friendly, but I was a little embarrassed because I just thought it was an open tour for people that were interested in the war, you know. So it all started with a faux pas, but I learned a lot, and I've been back, of course, to Gettysburg many times since then.
Well, I became involved really interested in the Civil War when my children were young, and I homeschooled them. And so every time we went to Washington, D.C., my husband had business there, we would take a few days off and drive over to some of the battlefields. And of course, it's always so surprising. People are always so surprised how close Gettysburg is to Washington, D.C.
Right. You can get to pretty much everything. People always express surprise at that. And I say, remember, they had to walk, you know. Only the elite had horses, but they basically had to walk. So, yeah, close. But one of my tours I went on, we stayed at Manassas, and of course, to the Union, it was Bull Run, and to the South, it was first Manassas. But, yeah, that would grip you. Those battlefields are there's just something about being there that really is, it stays with you.
And you sometimes, in some of the battlefields, there, it's still very much like it was, and you're walking there, and the stories come to your mind, and you get fascinated and want to read more about it. And so I thought when I was reading The Yankee Widow, how beautifully you wrote about basically 1863, how you drew us back into that time. So tell us about the story and how you came out with the idea, because it is a great story.
Well, the story is of course the main character is a young farm wife named Caroline, and she lives, Caroline Hammond, and she lives near Gettysburg on a farm. And you know, having been to the Gettysburg area, you know how it's beautifully green, and the land there is very fertile. And there are a lot of open spaces, a lot of pasture land. It's gorgeous. And from the first time I went there, it stuck in my mind that the calamity of what had happened beyond the battle, which was so horrendous that it shouldn't be a footnote at any point, but what I thought about from the very first was the women. The battle had happened there, and the American, Union, of course, triumphed after an awful fight. It was not an easy victory. And after that, the Union did come back and set up some hospitals, but they were real busy for, you know, some period of time. So the cleanup fell to the women. I always like to say men make the messes and women clean them up. And that was the case in Gettysburg. I was so struck by the stories of these women, not just poor Jenny Wade, who was accidentally caught in a crossfire and shot while she was making bread. She was the only civilian casualty at Gettysburg. But the women, they came and this was a small town, you know, and they came and they buried bodies. They dragged horses, dead horses and mules into piles and had to burn them. They didn't have any help but except men and very young boys, because down to their, you know, mid-teens, they were joining up and away with the fighting. So there have been wonderful novels written, Michael Shera and other people, but they're about the generals. And the generals fought a very different war than the foot soldiers. You know, they saw a lot of horrible stuff. But with the exception of people like Stonewall Jackson, who lost an arm and then subsequently died after Chancellorsville, most of them had it much softer than the foot soldier. So I wanted to write not about a couple of white generals and a president, but about ordinary people and people of color, people who were caught up in the spectacle of this, and I try to get inside each character. So to say how the idea started, that would be really hard to give a specific answer, but it's kind of an organic thing. It started with impressions and thinking about what it would be like to fight in that terrible heat, wearing in the Union side, wearing woolen outfits in that heat. And, you know, of course, the Confederates, a lot of them were just in plain clothes. They came in whatever they had when they left, and not, oftentimes that wasn't much. So all of this coalesced together, and I created Caroline, or she created me, I'm not sure which. But I wanted somebody who, you know, somebody relatively ordinary to show the amazing resilience of the human spirit. And to show what people can do when they have no other choice. Because remember, these women had no choice. They could not leave thousands of bodies gathered, laying on the ground till the Union got around to dealing with them. They had to be, it was hot. It was the first, second, third of July. So it was very, very hot back there, very humid. So they buried these bodies and tried to keep track of who was where, but what a job. And then, of course, this disaster on the 4th or 5th of July, after they buried most of these people, or a lot of them, and this is mostly women, remember, some of them very pregnant, and it rained really hard and washed away the covering on these shallow graves. So not only do we have this horrendous number of graves with soldiers on both sides, but we have a rainstorm that washes away the covering, so the bodies are exposed. But, you know, the concern, I mean, as grisly as that image was, that and the burning of the dead animals was a preventative action to keep cholera or typhoid or God knows what kind of diseases at bay. And I often tell people something like 2/3 of the fatalities in the Civil War, which numbered around 600,000, were from sepsis and disease. As bloody as the battles were, you know, it was more, they were killed as much by the open latrines and, you know, the lack of sanitation, especially in surgery. It was, to a modern person, it's incomprehensible. So I tried to be inside Caroline and see this through her eyes and tried to feel what she would feel. And she's a lot braver than I am, I'll tell you that.
Well,
that was a long answer. I hope not.
No, not at all, because it's exactly, it's the right description. I think when people hear this, they are going to be fascinated to find out more about Caroline, about how she has this strength and what she has to go through. And then all of the other characters that you have around her, with Rogan and Rebel Bridger, and of course, the slave, the freed slave, Juby. He's the escape slave.
Juby was the escape slave girl, and Enoch was a free black man who worked, but he was a former slave. There actually was a free black man that had a wonderful farm at Gettysburg, and I'm not sure what his story is. I'd like to find out what happened to him, but this subject is so big that I could spend whatever time I have left on this earth writing just about Gettysburg, never mind all the other battles. And it truly fascinates me. We didn't have much about that in school, I don't think, because you know how they kind of gloss over Abraham Lincoln and George Washington, like you almost feel like they weren't real people. They were, you know, they were so iconic that, you know, they didn't seem to be made of flesh and blood. But Lincoln, especially, was a fascinating man with an intellect incomprehensible to me. He had 3 months of very informal schooling, and yet he was so eloquent that he could have stood shoulder to shoulder with the great writers of that day. His, you know, his prose is beautiful, and his. After I read, especially I've read a lot of books about Lincoln, but my favorite is Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin. And that is, if you want a portrait of Lincoln, that is an excellent one. And of course, I want to add too that the Southern side, this for most people, the issue was not to retain their slaves. Slavery is indefensible. There's no getting around that. There's no excuse for it, especially in a nation that was created on principles of freedom. But there were so many other issues. Again, this war, like most wars, was a rich man's war and a poor man's fight, you know. And the Southern people were basically, and they did not, the vast majority, of course, did not live at Terra. They did not live on plantations and hold slaves and any of that. They had little farms and businesses in the towns and that kind of thing. And they did not own slavery, and they were not defending the institution of slavery. And I think it's important to know that. My own grandfather was born in North Carolina, and that was a Confederate state, obviously, but his father had hired men who were black, but there were no slaves on their place, and they were paid wages like everybody else, probably small wages, but that was the time, and the work was hard. But this was more common, you know, there were a lot of free black people then, even in the South, and all of these things, you know, need to be looked at. But the Southerners, that, and I'm not talking about the rich plantation owners here, please know. I'm talking about the regular ones, the ones who really did the fighting. They were not trying to preserve slavery. It was not even, they were trying to protect their homes. They felt that they were being invaded. And also, and I'm not condoning that. Excuse me. I'm just trying to give a reason for how they could fight. And to know that they were not fighting to retain slavery. And that, you know, I think it's important to know that, not just write every Confederate off as a racist, because that everybody, by today's standards, everybody from Lincoln on down would have been considered a racist. You know, so, and that subject is touchy, of course, and it was hard to show the spirit of the times, and yet, be respectful, and I made every effort to do that.
Well, I think you did, and I think you did a great job. And The Yankee Widow is a fascinating book. As I said, it's different from most of your other books, and I think that you really hit on something, a subject, one that's very important, and also the fact that you have such a very strong woman here, a character that I think many women will want to know. Caroline is somebody you want to say, I would like to know more about her. So I think everybody out there will enjoy this book. It's called The Yankee Widow. But before I let you go, I want to also mention that you are a very strong woman yourself, and you have established a foundation, which I think is just wonderful, and it's a scholarship for women.
Mm-hmm. We gave away, we've helped something like 50 women go through college, or just with small scholarships, because most of these women are like Caroline. They don't need a whole full run. They need a leg up, you know. So we gave gas cards on and on. Right now, though, the scholarships are on hiatus, not because I don't want to give them, but because of legal complications. I ended up spending more to keep the program going than I was giving to the women, and that seemed wrong to me. So we're working on that, and we'll have something else in place. And I believe very strongly that in any country, the way to change the world is to educate girls and women. And women like Caroline show you what can be done. Women are untapped resource, and, you know, as many other groups that would be considered minorities, or basically anybody who's not a white man, you know. We're losing so many wonderful inventors and writers and musicians and on, scientists and doctors, because we marginalize people, and we've got to stop that. We've got to outgrow it.
Well, I think that you've done a great job in this book and in all of your books, because essentially in all your books, even your cowboy books, the women are always strong. And
that's what I like to read about. And I am a strong woman. You're right. I have been through it. But, you know, you do what's before you to do. I was taught that. I was raised by a cowboy and his wife. And, you know, you just pushed up your sleeves and waded in and did what you had to do. And I think... you know, I love strong women, and I couldn't ever make a weak woman a heroine. She'd have to be somebody who needed to learn the error of her ways.
And I think one thing my listeners like to know, that, you know, you were rejected, but you didn't give up, and you now, I don't know, how many books do you have? Over 100, right?
Oh, well over 100. I might even be approaching 200. But yes, I had many many rejections, especially in the beginning, not so much after my work kind of caught on, but there's still a lot, you know, there's the haters online, and, you know, the setbacks and the, there's all kinds of things. It's life like anybody else. And, you know, things can set you back. Like I lost my first cousin 2 years ago this November, and I'm still getting over that because we slept in the same cradle. She was 6 months younger than I was, and so I didn't remember a time when she wasn't in my life, and losing her was terribly difficult. So, you know, we all face those things that we just have to tough up and get through.
Well, Linda, I think you're a fantastic author, and I'm so happy that you, of course, are with Irene Goodman.
Yes, who, I am.
You know, Irene,
I've been forever.
She was my very first guest.
Oh, my goodness, what a coincidence.
Isn't that?
Yes, Irene and I have been together since 1983, literally the beginning of my career. I'm one of those people who's only had one agent. And that's fine with me. She's great.
She is great. When I started this program 4 years ago, I didn't know any literary agents and I didn't know any authors. And then I got Irene, and she was the best first guest that anybody could ever have.
I think we've talked before, though, haven't we, Patsy?
Yeah, yeah.
I do a lot of these, but I'm pretty sure we've spoken before. And I really appreciate this opportunity and your kind words and you know, women are strong.
Exactly. Are you working on another? I'm sure you're working
absolutely
on another.
Absolutely. I'm working on the second. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. No. I'm working on the second book in that series, which is about Emily, Bridger's sister, Emily, and Rogan. And they will be at the plantation for a while and then start west because, you know, the Civil War really sparked the Western movement.
Well, it's going to be fun. And
yes,
I will.
There
keep,
are more books coming.
That's what I. That's what I wanted to hear because I'm looking forward to having you back soon. You're a delight.
Oh, I would love that.
Okay.
And I will even answer the phone the first time.
Okay, that's great. Okay.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Kathy.
Thank you, now, Linda. Bye, bye. Okay. All right. This has been one of those little days with the little gremlins running around, and so. It was fun. We've just I really apologize to Big Ed in the control room. He's so good, and we have these things happen. You know, sometimes
the thing is, every time I called her, she hit the decline button instead of accept.
I know, and many people until I got used to my phone, I did that too. I remember when that first happened to me, I couldn't slide it over. I hate those ones where you have to slide it over. Now, some phones, you just put your finger on and it opens up. Anyway, but Ed, you did it. You did it. You got everything organized for me because it's really, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm going to be in New York next week. But meanwhile, I want to tell everyone that one of the joys of life is to hear your words. The audible book, I'm going backwards even on this, to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those words, lights, camera, action, and you will see your book on a streaming video or on a big screen or even if it's a television series. You never know. You just have to keep trying. And as Linda said, she was rejected until Irene Goodman picked her up, and they've been together now all of these years. And that's what happens when you find a good agent. Wow. You are really, really lucky. And I know that Irene has worked hard to get Linda up and making her so famous. So anyway, make sure you say something nice to somebody today. I've already said nice things to Big Ed. I'll say some more. Thank you, Ed. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him. Everybody, bye-bye now.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
Cottle says no more. I'm Mike Moss. The White House is directing former counsel Don McGahn not to turn over